This coverage of the Global Conversation on Change is brought to you by BrightRock, the first ever needs-matched life insurance that changes as your life changes.
Everybody's kind of wondering, you know, what's going to happen with global warming to the southern countries. I'm speaking to somebody from New Zealand. He's Sean Lucleen, and he's head of Food Systems Initiative, and he's a member of the Executive Committee of the World Economic Forum. Let's talk rugby first. What do you say about that win of the Springboks over New Zealand?
But that was wonderful. I mean, you know, I just thought it was, you know, it was a magic occasion for South Africa. I lived in South Africa for many years myself, and so very partial to South African rugby. And I just thought, yeah, South Africa's time had come, and it obviously showed that it had. And they were playing for something much bigger than rugby, I think. And that came through. And for the world and for everyone, this was a great thing.
South Africans do that when they've...
We'll be back next time, don't worry.
We'll be back next time, I'm sure you would. With global warming, they always say the southern countries, which is New Zealand as well, but South Africa in particular, would have a problem. There's already food shortages, there are droughts. How do you think the South would be affected by global warming?
I lived in Australia for many years as well, and it's interesting being back in Australia over Christmas when you see the fires. And you see this, in a way, in real time happening. Because what's happening is, in a way, the rest of the world on average has gone up about 1 degree. Australia has now gone up 2 degrees because of its proximity to the Antarctic, and the way that the cold air, hot air currents were shifting and all of that. And so, in a way, you're seeing already that jump of what can happen when you shift from 1 degree to suddenly 2 degrees, which becomes, you're moving into much more volatility, much more extreme. And so there were obviously a lot of issues as to, you know, that underpin the fires in Australia, to do with drought and all of those kinds of things. But what it does show is, you know, the extreme, and I think that's what we're going to start to see more of. And we won't necessarily be able to predict in what form that will happen, but I think we're going to see more of those extreme events happening in a much quicker rotation than we would have historically. And so.
So the food urgency wouldn't be in countries like New Zealand and Australia immediately. The food urgency would be in Africa. Are you starting to talk about that? Because there's already, you know, food shortages in Zimbabwe.
No, I mean, we see it happening real time in southern Africa. And I think if you're a smallholder farmer in southern Africa, or if you're a farmer of any kind in southern Africa, I mean, it wasn't that many years ago where you could quite easily predict when the rains were coming and when the seasons were. That ability to do that has gone. And so in a way, this is, you know, we both have to be able to mitigate, look at how we can mitigate against this. But at the same time, we have to also now really look to how we can adapt for that, because the reality is here. This isn't a future scenario. This is happening now. And so then that means building the kinds of systems that will allow the countries in southern Africa to be more resilient to that change.
There's a backlash against genetically modified foods, which will probably help us to grow hardier crops. Is that something we need to overcome to supply food to those areas?
Look at it slightly differently, in the sense that I think what we really need to look at is innovation generally. Genetically modified foods is just one particular track. When you look at gene editing, which is a whole broader area, you know, there's all different forms of the way in which we can look at innovation. I think what we need to do is actually accelerate how we can use innovation to help in you know, what is effectively becoming a real crisis. And that's innovation in the plant technology. But it's also innovation in the kind of financing and risk tools that we need. It's innovation in the use of data systems so that the right data is getting into the hands of, you know, say, if you're a woman in Zimbabwe who's farming her land, you want to have at least the most accurate data that you can. So how do we do that in a way that makes sense? And it also means innovation in business models and innovation in the way we create policy. So I would take that broader innovation lens, not just, you know, looking at it from a strictly GM side, and then say, do we have the right ecosystem in place to adapt the way that we need to?
Well, we probably don't. So is there an openness of governments I'm talking about Southern Africa, because I think that's where the most pressing need would be first. Is there an acceptance there that we need to change whatever model that even a subsistence farmer would be able to survive?
Well, in many ways, and we've seen this many times in Southern or Eastern Africa, there's that ability to leapfrog innovation. And we saw that with cell phone technology coming originally out of South Africa and how they use cell phones and the innovation around that. We're now seeing that in terms of financing in Kenya with M-Pesa, really dynamic, cutting edge technology use that can actually leapfrog and allow us to create the systems that will allow us to not just adapt to this, but even go further to actually have a positive influence on how this can work. I mean, Southern Africa is an agricultural region. And actually, in many ways, if we rethink farming practices, we look at the way we subsidize farming practices and we create subsidies to encourage farmers to take more regenerative practices, actually, the millions of hectares that are available in Southern Africa could become a carbon sink, where farmers could actually trade that on a carbon market and make a secondary income out of improving the quality of the soil or something like that. And so all of these innovations are coming on stream.
So what do you mean by a carbon sink?
So it's the ability to draw down or lock carbon instead of releasing it. And so that can be done through trees, it can be done through the soil, it can be done through mangroves, it can even be done through seaweed and, through the ocean floor. So all of these can act as a carbon sink. And what we need to be able to do is unlock that in a way that this becomes actually so that forest areas and natural areas or even farming areas can actually become a viable economic commodity in their own right. While we need to deal with the issues around reducing carbon, in many ways for Southern Africa, the challenge is more adaptation to the weather challenges that are there, and then really starting to think through how can we actually turn this into an opportunity. And that's what we can really make work.
Thank you for speaking to us.